The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Welcome to a very cold and wet Israel today. Again, unfortunately, this winter weather doesn't want to leave us. We apparently are experiencing the coldest March in 10 years. Hopefully it also means that our water resources will be well replenished before the summer season sets on. But just a little snippet before we get into the Israeli news, just an interesting piece that I saw. Madeleine Albright passed away yesterday, former U.S. Secretary of State, the first woman Secretary of State to hold office. She was the second lady ambassador to the United Nations to represent the U.S. and, of course, the first lady Secretary of State. And the interesting thing about Madeleine Albright, who was, of course, a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, born in Prague in the former Czechoslovakia in the day, so was never a contender to be president due to the fact that she wasn't born in the USA and therefore was regarded as something of not a threat to the sitting president in terms of potentially wanting to take office. She wanted to negotiate a peace agreement between Israel and Syria and had offered that to President Clinton at the time, something that we now know never ever transpired. But just the other interesting thing, very interesting thing for me about Madeleine Albright was that she discovered only while she was Secretary of State that she actually came from a Jewish family. She had never understood that halachically she was actually Jewish. She grew up in a Catholic environment, family escaped from wartime Eastern Europe. Three of her Jewish grandparents apparently perished in the Holocaust. So just an interesting snippet about Madeleine Albright, who of course has left her mark on the world and on the United States in particular.
And we of course spoke about that a bit earlier. Crazy, her story. And she says finding out about a Jewish heritage was like being given a gift. Really just incredible. Talking about some of the stories, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and Russian President Putin spoke again on the phone yesterday about the situation in Ukraine. Do we know specifically what was discussed?
Well, we are not told in great detail what was discussed. It's interesting that most of the reports refer to the Kremlin report about the phone call, which seems to have detailed a few different topics of discussion. And in particular, we understand that there was quite a lot of talk about progress in mediation, how to get towards this moment when a ceasefire can be declared. And this is really all according to the readout of the call that was shared by the Kremlin. Apparently, President Putin shared his view about the conflict in Ukraine, how the Russian military operation is going. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett shared the conversations that he had been holding with other world leaders on the issue of trying to reach a ceasefire arrangement. And this was the first call that they'd held in over a week. What Prime Minister Bennett is saying at the moment is that there is progress. And in order to demonstrate what the progress is in these mediation talks, he says that the fact that Ukraine has given up on their demand to join NATO is considered to be a significant piece of progress because it really just removes one of the obstacles. Other obstacles that have been removed, concessions that have been made on the Russian part, include the demand for regime change. Apparently, President Putin is no longer demanding that Zelensky be removed from office. He's also no longer demanding that Ukraine becomes entirely demilitarized, which apparently was one of the Russian demands in order to reach a ceasefire. But after a month of war in Ukraine and substantial devastation and growing refugee crisis, it's obviously imperative that a ceasefire is reached sooner rather than later. And just to return back to this perennial discussion that we've been having about Israel's neutrality or potentially lack of neutrality, I just noticed that Russia is now threatening to expel U.S. diplomats from Russia. Of course, this comes on the back of the sanctions that the U.S. has led and imposed upon Russia, which are not insubstantial. And there is just an increasing kind of feeling of heading towards a crisis in the relationship between the US and Russia if we haven't already reached a crisis moment. And I'm still not sure what I think about whether Israel treading the middle road and maintaining an open dialogue with both countries is right or is it wrong. Has it been more effective or less effective than the approach, for example, that Russia, that the US and the UK and other European countries have taken, which is really to isolate Russia, to impose massive sanctions, and really to do damage to the relationship, if that's the right term, really to break down, completely cut off the line of communication between themselves and Russia. Is that more influential? Is that helpful in terms of reaching a ceasefire and stopping the war? I really don't know. I know that the sanctions have had a massive impact on Russia. Their economy is not doing well. People in Russia are not doing well in general. There's been a massive influx of people, Jews wanting to come and live in Israel from Russia, not from Ukraine, but from Russia, in light of all the things that have been happening in Russia as a result of these sanctions. And yet the sanctions don't seem to be stopping the war. And so what will stop the war? Is it going to be the sanctions or is it going to be the dialogue? I guess time will tell. But of course, your views are always welcome.
Absolutely. And I just wonder if it's not maybe a combination of everything, because the sanctions are impacting on the oligarchs, on people within the first realm of power around Putin. And you just wonder if they will, when they are impacted, might start placing pressure on him to change. I don't know. It'll be an interesting one to see.
There seems to be little doubt that President Putin is under pressure. There are numerous reports about things that are going on in Russia, which are not publicly reported, but rumors, and we don't know how many of these rumors we can believe or not, but rumors that, you know, he has placed under house arrest some of his senior generals for giving him incorrect, inaccurate advice before he embarked upon this war in Ukraine, and that potentially he's now looking at with some regret because of the fact that he might have received inaccurate information. It's very hard to tell what's happening in Russia.
A new report issued to the United Nations Human Rights Council has again accused Israel of apartheid. What is the latest accusation now?
Yeah, this gets so tiresome. And of course, the latest report again linked to Michael Link, who is the special rapporteur on issues in Palestine. He has a very long and very descriptive title, which I don't have in front of me right now. But he is the person who's responsible for submitting these reports to the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva. And once again, he has not disappointed, and he's come up with another report where he is talking about apartheid in Israel and in the so-called occupied territories. There were just a few snippets of his report which I wanted to focus on, just to kind of try and question exactly where this comes from, because I get very frustrated when Israel is branded as an apartheid state, as what Michael Link says. With the eyes of the international community wide open, Israel has imposed upon Palestine an apartheid reality in a post-apartheid world. Now, I don't know what Palestine is, and I don't know where this apartheid reality has been imposed. But what he says essentially is that the political system of entrenched rule in the so-called occupied Palestinian territory, which endows one racial national ethnic group with substantial rights, benefits and privileges, while intentionally subjecting another group to live behind walls, checkpoints and under permanent military rule, satisfies a prevalent evidentiary standard for the existence of apartheid. Now, we can take that particular sentence from his report and we can literally rip it to pieces in terms of talking about military rule, in terms about rights and privileges and benefits, while, you know, and we can really rip almost every particular part of that paragraph out from under him, because I think it contains so many inaccuracies that it's just really, really sad that people are being forced to read this information, and that the more he says it, the more people believe it. And I think therein lies the major danger. But here is the real kicker for me, because he talks about the fact that Israel has been issuing work permits for laborers from Gaza and the West Bank to work in Israel. And he says the following: the issuing of thousands of work permits for Palestinian laborers in the West Bank and Gaza to work in Israel amounts to the exploitation of labor of a racial group.
Oh, my word. Okay. So it would be better if Israel did not issue work permits.
It's so fascinating for me just to share with the listeners that the demand for Hebrew language study in Gaza has gone through the roof. And the reason why people want to learn Hebrew in Gaza is because there is opportunity to work in Israel, and they believe that if they have greater command of Hebrew, they will have a better chance of getting a job in Israel under this program of issuing work permits for Gazans around the Gaza Strip area to those people who wish to work. So I just want to throw that into the mix as a slight kind of something that people don't necessarily understand is happening in Gaza at the moment. And I just find this whole approach to be astonishing. And I just almost have no words in order to describe how much I feel, how strongly I feel about how inaccurate these reports are. So while I do encourage people to read this, I really do, because I think we need to know what the other side is saying and thinking. But I think we really need to be so cautious about believing what's presented here as fact, because really almost every fact could be taken and ripped to pieces. There are always two sides to every coin.
It's incredible, but I think to me the most perplexing sentence is that first one, that Israel has imposed it on Palestine. It's as though Israel doesn't, as though Israel is the doesn't belong there.
The ruling authority.
Yeah,
I think it goes further, because I think we need to understand that the vast majority of those people living in the, Judea and Samaria who are not Israeli citizens are under the general governance of the Palestinian Authority. Israel has very little to do with the day-to-day governance of things that happen within the Palestinian Authority area at all. There is no recognition of the terrorism that Israel has been forced to suffer. And so when we talk about checkpoints and when we talk about walls and things like that, there is no link to security, because that's really what the checkpoints and the walls are all about. And you can absolutely take it as given that if the situation was entirely secure, and that if Israel didn't live under this constant threat of terrorism, those walls and those checkpoints would simply not exist. But of course, we would never have that acknowledgement from Michael Link or the Human Rights Council in general.
Absolutely. It's just astounding. It's just really, really incredible. Israel is now joining the Quantum Computing Club.
Yeah, so I actually had to look up what quantum computing is. And I guess that, you know, one or two other people out there might also wonder what the difference is between a regular computer that we know today, whether it be our phone or our laptop or any other computer that we use, and a quantum computer. And the difference between the two is that quantum computers use the properties of quantum physics to store data and to perform computations, which obviously give them a vastly larger ability to store data and to perform these computations. And instead of using the traditional binary bits of zeros and ones that we know classical computers use today, a quantum computer uses a basic unit of memory called a quantum bit, or a qubit, which is spelled Q-U-B-I-T, a qubit, a quantum bit. And apparently these quantum bits are able to store all the numbers from 0 to 255, one quantum bit, as opposed to one regular bit for a classical computer, which can store only one of the numbers between 0 and 255. So we're starting to get an idea of how much larger the capability of quantum computers is when compared to classical computers. And the interesting thing about Israel's participation in this quantum computing world is that the Defense Ministry's Directorate of Research and Development in the middle of February published a competition that they try to encourage people to build quantum computers in Israel. Now, we understand that there are only something like 30 quantum computers in the world. So this is a very, very elite club of people building quantum computers. And we are told that the Weizmann Institute in Rehovot has a very, very advanced program to build a quantum computer, and in fact has already succeeded in building what is considered to be a relatively small quantum computer, a 5-qubit quantum computer, and they are well on the way, we understand, to building a 64-qubit quantum computer, which would be something that would far outstretch the computation power of even the most advanced classical computers, and sort of compares itself to this Google supercomputer that became so famous back in 2019 because of its capabilities, this a massive computer that made headlines. Israel, we understand, is very, very well advanced towards building a massive quantum computer, not only the 5-qubit one that already exists. And we understand that this is really going to form the basis for Israel's future technological development. Will just create a massive change to the infrastructure that is currently being used to develop Israel's technological base, economic base. It'll have an impact on security and engineering and all kinds of scientific areas. So this is really apparently the way of the future. Just an interesting little technological piece of what's happening on the ground in Israel.
Well, certainly way, way, way advanced and punching, as always, above its weight. It is about to go 8 o'clock. Anthony Rach, thank you as always. I just took a look at the weather tomorrow in Jerusalem for the Jerusalem Marathon. Boy, oh boy, I've never been more grateful not to be a runner as I am right now. 4 degrees yeah. and raining at the start of the
Unfortunately, not good weather. And just a reminder to listeners that we go on to our summer clocks tomorrow, ironically. So we will move an hour ahead of South Africa, starting from the middle of the night tonight. So as of tomorrow, we will be 1 hour ahead of your clock.
Thank you, as always. 8 o'clock, I'm Howard Feldman. Anthony Rach, Shabbat Shalom. Have a fantastic weekend.